firefighting foam used at Pittsburgh's airport for years contained toxic PFAS chemicals. But they didn't stay there.
Just about every drop of foam went onto the ground, into the soil, into the waterways of the state.
I'm Kara Holsapple. This week on the Allegheny Front, a new investigation looks at PFAS contamination and what's being done about it. Plus, the Trump administration wants to roll back fuel efficiency standards for vehicles to be more industry-friendly. But California disagrees.
The arguments used to be you can't grow your economy and be green, and I think California has disproved that.
And after a big storm, a tree falls on a car with two climate activists inside. They're safe, but it brings up feelings of anger and also hope.
We know that the stories we choose to tell ourselves at these crucial times impact the future.
Those and more environmental stories are coming up on the Allegheny Front. Stay with us. On August 13th, President Donald Trump defended his administration's environmental rollbacks and attacked Democrats while speaking to workers at a chemical plant Shell is building in Pennsylvania. The Allegheny Front's Reed Frazier reports.
Shell announced its decision to build the $6 billion ethane cracker in 2016. That was before President Trump was elected. Still, he cited the project, which will use ethane from natural gas to make plastic, as an example of how his policies are helping workers in the region. And he defended his decision to pull out of the Paris Climate Agreement. Trump said his efforts to cut environmental regulations have helped bring more economic activity to the region.
Look at the numbers. Look at the way you lived, because you never had anybody that wanted to take advantage of it. But now we're taking advantage of it. You're sitting on gold, and we're taking advantage of it. And your future has never looked brighter or better.
Trump also criticized Democratic candidates, saying their plans to deal with climate change would hurt American workers.
Virtually every leading Democrat has vowed to eliminate fossil fuels, obliterating millions of American jobs, devastating communities, and bankrupting factories, families, and senior citizens all across this region.
But as Trump spoke, a group of demonstrators gathered in the nearby town of Beaver. They were there to protest the plant's contributions to air pollution, climate change, and the increasing problem of plastics in the environment. Carl Davidson of nearby Aliquippa was one of them.
Why are we putting up with all this pollution and these problems just for plastic? You know? Don't we have enough plastic? Why in the hell do we need some more plastic?
Shell says there are 5,000 workers on site building the plant, which will be able to produce more than 3 billion pounds of plastic a year. It's slated to begin production in 2021. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Reed Frazier.
A new poll from Franklin and Marshall College finds widespread support among Pennsylvania voters for Governor Tom Wolf's plan to pay for infrastructure upgrades by taxing natural gas drilling companies. State Impact Pennsylvania's Marie Cusick has more.
The poll shows almost 7 in 10 Pennsylvanians either strongly or somewhat favor Governor Wolf's Restore PA plan. The proposal calls for $4.5 billion worth of infrastructure initiatives over 4 years, funded by a severance tax on natural gas production. It would be targeted at things like mitigating flooding, addressing blight, and expanding broadband access. Birdwood Yost directs the Center for Opinion Research at Franklin and Marshall and says the support goes across different demographic and ideological groups.
I'm not really surprised, given that we're marrying two topics together that people generally we know support, infrastructure improvements and natural gas taxes.
A spokesman for the gas industry trade group, the Marcellus Shale Coalition, declined to comment on the poll results but pointed out that the gas impact fees drillers pay on a per-well basis have brought in over $1 billion since they were enacted in 2012. Marie Cusick, State Impact Pennsylvania.
In May, we reported that two military bases near Pittsburgh International Airport tested positive for PFAS contamination. PFAS is a class of so-called forever chemicals. They don't degrade, and they can contaminate water supplies. Now, Oliver Morrison of PublicSource.org has found that the airport itself likely has this chemical contamination, too.
AFFF is the problem. It stands for aqueous film-forming foam. It's a special firefighting foam developed in the late 1960s. It's really good at putting out fuel fires like the ones that can happen during a plane crash. Bob Sharding worked as a firefighter at Pittsburgh International Airport from 1987 to 2007. He explains why.
Aqueous film-forming foam floats on the surface, so as the fire goes out, it creates a blanket that keeps it from reigniting.
But like many other products, such as Teflon and Scotchgard, AFFF contains PFAS chemicals. If ingested, these chemicals can cause cancers, kidney disease, and hormone disruptions. I talked to five former firefighters at the airport, including Sharding. They say they didn't know these foams were toxic, so instead of cleaning it up, they would let it seep into the ground or wash into streams.
Just about every drop of foam that they ever bought went onto the ground, into the soil, into the waterways of the state.
Sharding says they spilled AFFF when testing the foam equipment. They also used it to cover fuel spills at the airport. And during yearly fire drills, the firefighters said they ignited diesel fuel on a pit of water. Then they would practice spraying foam on it and leave it on the ground. In total, he estimates, they spilled thousands of gallons of AFFF.
The FAA totally required it, and to the best of my knowledge, didn't really care how you went about doing it, just as long as they got their numbers.
The Allegheny County Airport Authority released a statement saying it has already switched over to a less toxic form of foam, though they didn't say when. The statement also says the authority is minimizing impacts from its equipment testing. The firefighter said they sometimes use AFFF away from the airport, including at a training facility in North Park. Sharding also remembers a big fire in the county along Allegheny River Boulevard.
There was a restaurant, and they were losing it, and so the chief said, quick, go to the airport, tell them we need foam.
Just a little bit of AFFF can cause a big problem. At one fire station in Rhode Island, investigators say a single 5-gallon can of foam contaminated the well water of more than 30 homes. Now $3 million is being spent to connect those homes to a different water supply. Public Source looked at Pittsburgh airport records, and between 2012 and 2018, the airport purchased nearly 5,000 gallons of foam. The firefighters say that similar amounts of foam have been used since the 1970s. In June, I approached Christina Kasotis, Chief Executive Officer for the Allegheny County Airport Authority, after a board meeting.
There's a really high likelihood that there's contamination on the airport. Is the airport going to do anything?
We've done everything that we're required to do, and we'll continue to do everything that we're required.
She's right. There are no laws or regulations that require the airport to do anything about PFAS yet. Congress is looking at legislation. The U.S. EPA is looking into creating new rules. But it could take years. Meanwhile, the public drinking water at the Moon Township Municipal Authority near the airport is already treated to remove PFAS chemicals. But residents with private water wells could be drinking contaminated water. So I asked Kasotis about a National Science Foundation study that recommended airports start looking at how they used AFFF in the past. That way, the airport would know where to look for problems.
Listen, we're doing everything that's required by DEP and the EPA and everything that's required by the FAA. We follow all the rules.
Have you done a historical analysis? Because the National Science Foundation 2017 asked.
We follow all of the rules.
But many airports are going beyond what the rules require. Martha's Vineyard Airport started testing for PFAS last year. It discovered 14 homes had contamination above the EPA's health advisory, so the airport is installing filters for their drinking water. Will Pittsburgh's airport eventually follow suit? Right now, they won't say. I'm Oliver Morrison for PublicSource.org.
You can find the full report at PublicSource.org. They're a news partner of ours. This is the Allegheny Front. I'm Carol Holsapple. Sometimes news about global warming is grim. Heat waves, flooding, landslides. A climate activist proposes a way to cut through the chaos we're creating so we can get to a solution.
The only way to hear the universe speak to us and through us is by pausing to listen.
Coming up later on the Allegheny Front, a story of frustration and hope about action on climate change. Stay tuned. Climate change was the subject of U.S. Representative Mike Doyle's town hall on Wednesday in Pittsburgh, and it was a number one voting issue for many who attended. Elise Yoder of Forest Hills said there's no time for solutions that don't bring about sweeping changes. She criticized Doyle for not prioritizing the issue.
No, I don't think he's been outspoken enough. It's so urgent right now.
A United Nations report last year said the world needs to cut carbon emissions by up to 50% in the next decade, or suffer temperature increases that will cause devastating harm to the planet. Experts at the panel talked about technological and legislative fixes for the crisis. Doyle also outlined a political solution, voting Democratic.
I think that if we're going to be able to enact robust legislation to stop climate change, we're not only going to have to maintain our majority in the House, we've got to change a lot of faces in the United States Senate, and most importantly, in the White House.
The Trump administration has rolled back an Obama-era initiative to cut carbon emissions from coal-fired power plants, the Clean Power Plan, in favor of ACE. The Affordable Clean Energy Rule eases restrictions on those plants. On Tuesday, a coalition of 29 cities and states, including Pennsylvania, sued to block the new rule because it fails to set limits for greenhouse gases. On his fourth day in office, President Trump invited automakers to the White House for a friendly chat.
I think you're going to find this to be from very inhospitable to extremely hospitable.
And soon after, Trump showed the automakers his hospitality. His EPA administrator at the time, Scott Pruitt, reversed Obama-era fuel efficiency standards, saying they were too strict. The Trump administration's plan rolled back the standard from 54.5 miles per gallon to 37. But recently, news broke that four of the world's biggest automakers hashed out a different deal. Not with the White House, but with California.
Just as the EPA was about to roll out its plan to weaken rules for tailpipe emissions, its perennial nemesis, California, says carmakers are lining up on its side.
The negotiations were conducted by representatives of four automakers, Ford, Honda, VW, and BMW, and regulators for a state agency inside California's Environmental Protection Agency. The company cited regulatory certainty and meaningful greenhouse gas emission reductions. The Allegheny Front's Reed Frazier caught up with Jared Blumenfeld, the man who leads California's EPA, at a conference in Vermont. Blumenfeld is also a former regional administrator for the U.S. EPA and hosts the podcast Podship Earth. They spoke a few days before the deal between California and the automakers was announced, and those negotiations were still top secret. Reed began by asking Blumenfeld how California's fight with the feds over fuel efficiency standards got started.
Back at the beginning of the environmental movement in the 1960s, California had the worst air quality, and it really motivated a lot of citizens to say, we can't even breathe. What are we going to do about it? That led to the creation in California of laws that protect and really reduce emissions coming from cars, from the tailpipe. And those regulations were honored when in 1970, the United States and President Nixon signed into law the United States Clean Air Act. So California was given a special status under the law to be able to pass stricter laws than the rest of the nation. And if you fast forward to now, without California, we probably wouldn't have had the catalytic converter. We wouldn't have all the advances that you have in clean vehicles. So California does a number of things. It sets zero emission mandates for car manufacturers. And because there are 40 million people in California and 26 million cars, the car industry has to pay attention. And as a result, 14 other states have joined with California and also follow California standards. So now nearly more than half the nation, when it comes to the number of cars sold, are following California standards. In the Obama administration, there was this goal to harmonize, bring together the emissions from tailpipes and greenhouse gas emissions. So it was kind of brought together into what's called the Clean Car Rules.
Because this is all one problem, global warming. And a lot of global warming comes from carbon emissions from cars.
It is one problem, Reed, but it's also a number of problems. So you can have greenhouse gas emissions from increased vehicle miles traveled, so the total miles that you're traveling. But you might not have pollution from other sources like nitrous oxide. So our goal is to reduce both. We need to take care of things like asthma at the same time as we're taking care of greenhouse gas emissions. So that's why these rules are brought together. It was all good. It was going to get us by 2026 to 54 miles to the gallon. And then Trump came in 2016 and froze them and basically said, we're going to just keep them as they are. Then doesn't need to be any increase. And there's a very, very flawed argument that they came out with. Basically, it said, you know, people aren't going to buy new cars if they're more expensive, and cleaner cars are more expensive. And therefore, 14,000 people are going to die each year from not being in safer, newer cars. That's not borne out by any history. Every set of cars are always cleaner than the ones before and a little bit more expensive, and people keep buying them. So California's pushing back. What we've seen in the last few months is car manufacturers stepping up. They sent a letter to the White House, to President Trump, and to Governor Gavin Newsom saying, you guys really, we need to work this out. California obviously is here for the long term. They buy a lot of cars. We want to bring this together. We haven't seen, unfortunately, the Trump administration's willingness to sit down and really be serious about negotiations. But the car companies are coming to the table and realizing, you know what, electric vehicles are part of our future. Cleaner cities, reducing the amount of pollution that causes asthma, all these things are part of a future that car manufacturers have bought into. The interesting part is that the oil companies are really behind most of these attacks. So the oil companies are going to the Trump White House, even when the car companies are saying, we're good. We like selling electric vehicles.
So the car companies basically weren't all that unhappy with the way things were going with this transition to very efficient vehicles, a lot of electric vehicles.
Well, no, they kind of were. They jumped on the bandwagon when Trump won, whereas they'd been very on board before. So I think they made a bet that Trump would be good for them and this deregulatory kind of action would eventually benefit them. I don't think they really understood the full power that California would bring, the number of lawsuits that we would bring, and the action that we would take. And so recently, Governor Newsom came together with 26 other governors around the country and said, you know what, our future is with clean vehicles and we're going to buy them and we want the car companies on board. And I think you're going to see more and more car companies coming on board and really getting with the California program.
So California is fighting back, and along with a number of other states, in these fuel efficiency standards. How much leverage or power does California or other states have? What is the sort of basis of that power?
Well, the basis of why we're doing it is environmental protection means something. We're, as public servants, in charge of protecting public health and the environment, and that's a really important job, and we take it seriously. And this erosion of public trust and the complete, you know, goal of annihilating environmental laws is something that's really damaging to public health. And the American Medical Association last month came out with a statement that global warming is the single largest threat to public health in America today. And we have a president and administration that's really ignoring it at all of our peril. You know, if you think about any state, but California kind of has people that self-select to go there. They like the outdoors, they care about the environment, and that's why they elect people that care about the environment. And they see Trump's attacks for what they are, which is really baseless and, you know, doing the bidding of large oil. The arguments used to be you can't grow your economy and be green. And I think California has disproved that. You know, Trump can easily, from his kind of very limited perspective of looking at electoral politics, he knows he's not going to get California. He's never going to win the electoral college votes in California. But the car manufacturers, the other folks that sell into the California market, see 40 million customers. And so there's different lenses that people look at California, and it allows us. We absolutely have no interest in attacking Trump. We feel like we're defending ourselves from an attack that's completely unwarranted. So our goal is to reach out to other states to think about how we can work together to really hold back the tide. You know, Trump has been very open, and I think a lot of people in early days were like, wow, this seems like a rear guard secret action. I'm like, no, he's telling everyone exactly what he's doing, and he's very forcefully advocating for destroying environmental protections. We need to be as forceful and clear about why they need to be protected.
So that was one of my questions is, were you surprised at, I mean, some people have called this, you know, the greatest rollback of environmental protections in EPA history. I mean, it's sort of, sure.
but we can't, it's not a throwaway line because the magnitude, the scale of the impact that he is having is tremendous. The people that day in, day out go to a job at the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency are heroes in my book, and he's demoralizing them, he's cutting their budgets, he's doing every single thing he can to make their job less easy. And that's not just one president. That will take a generation. Just thinking about it, like people graduating from environmental science, are they going to join up at the EPA? Because they're just going to be fearful that this will happen again. So it's really put a chilling effect, a fear in people's hearts that somehow these institutions that we thought were not susceptible to this level of government intervention are being eroded from the inside. So it's a really big deal. And I think we also need to remember that nearly every single environmental protection law has been signed into the books by Republican presidents. And we've somehow got to this level, and I think this is the fault of Democrats and Republicans together, where we've allowed the environment to become a bipartisan, no longer become a bipartisan issue, which it has been and needs to once again become. So, you know, any of the Republicans in California and other places that are really pushing to say, we need to go back to our roots of protection. You know, in California, for instance, the agency that I serve was created by Pete Wilson, a Republican governor. The California Environmental Quality Act was signed by Governor Ronald Reagan. The Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, every single law that you can imagine from the beginning of EPA, including the Environmental Protection Agency itself, was signed into law by President Nixon. So we need to get back there because it's not an acceptable place where the environment's used as a football.
Jared Blumenfeld is the secretary of the California Environmental Protection Agency and the host of the podcast Podship Earth. He spoke with the Allegheny Front's Reed Frazier for our podcast, Trump on Earth. There's more of that conversation at trumponearth.org or wherever you get your podcasts. This past spring, a 40-foot cherry tree fell on top of a brand new electric car while two women were driving along a city street in Pittsburgh. The car was totaled. The women survived, alive and unscratched. They're climate educators Kiersey Jansa and Mary Ann Steiner. Local TV news was live on the scene, but nobody was talking about climate change. Yet for the women, a tree falling on top of two climate activists in an electric vehicle, it was just part of the story.
My name is Kiersey. I'm a native Finn, and nature is my beloved neighbor. Some associate my name Kiersey with Kirsikka, a cherry. In the spring, I had been taking pictures of trees everywhere I went, mesmerized by their life force. On that late April Friday, I picked up my friend and colleague Marian Steiner in our brand new electric vehicle. The car was so new that it still had temporary license plates.
We were on our way to a meeting at the Patagonia store in Pittsburgh to talk about the ways the company and our Creatives for Climate Collaborative could inspire people to take climate action. C4C is a collaboration of artists interested in incorporating climate change themes into their work through choice of materials, message, and activities.
I showed Marianne the new C4C portfolio I had just created. The folder had a Dr. Seuss I Speak for the Tree sticker on the cover of it. She smiled, looked at it, and placed it on the dashboard. We drove down Ellsworth Avenue. Then Marianne shrieked,
"A tree!"
At first, I thought it was a branch falling on the hood, but then realized we were surrounded by green.
Nothing but green. And the windshield shattered, like water crystallizing to ice. Time froze for a moment.
There we were, inside our small bubble, hugged by this huge tree, like two bird sisters in a nest. The car ceiling was dented, but did not touch our heads. "Are you okay?"
"Yes, are you okay?" we chirped. We both were.
I was able to open the passenger side door, and we got out.
My knees started shaking after I was standing on the street, while I was walking around the scene, waiting for the tree crew to arrive and free the car. My anger started pouring out. I found myself yelling, telling the rescue guys how angry I am that trees need to die because of us. They listened to me with empathy, probably thinking that this poor woman is in shock.
I went into a deep calm, just looking at Kiersey's car submerged in the tree, realizing the TV reporters who arrived on the scene thought she was mad and afraid of the trees, rather than feeling for the trees. We learned later that it was Arbor Day.
I don't want to leap to weave meanings out of what happened to us, but when you're halted by a dying 40-foot giant, it does not take much imagination to get the message. Pause. The black cherry gave me courage to say this out loud. I'm exhausted. It's draining to try to wake up people who, most of the time for very human reasons, don't want to talk about climate crisis and face our shared reality. I'm sad and I grieve. The spring came and went. The summer is here, painfully hot. And so is this disrespect that we have created and are creating by our disconnected, dismissive, distracted, and rushed ways of living. Eastern hemlocks, redwood trees, Joshua trees, and so many other species, including humans around the world, are dying. In our region, climate change is causing more torrential rains, more and more landslides, and more trees falling. I'm afraid. I know the despair of those who are putting their hands up, saying that we're doomed. I feel pain for the world, and I also see and feel the light. This deep sense of meaning, this sense of belonging to something larger than my tiny self, keeps millions of us around the world going.
We know the inspiration, the joy, the courage, and compassion that opens up when we face our pain for the world and work together. We know that the stories we choose to tell ourselves at these crucial times impact the future. They determine our legacy, for sure.
Maybe the black cherry saved Marianne and me to sing another song, a song of pause. The only way to hear the universe speak to us and through us is by pausing, pausing to listen. There is a new story that wants to be told. It wants to be told by us all. Thank you, Black Cherry from Ellsworth Avenue. Thank you for the home and all the food you provided for birds and bugs, for cleaning our air and water, for all the carbon you captured for the benefit of all living beings.
Farewell, dear tree neighbor.
Those were climate educators Mary Ann Steiner and Kiersey Jansa. You can read Jansa's original essay on the topic at AlleghenyFront.org, where you'll find links to organizations that care for trees and those that encourage conversations about climate change. That's AlleghenyFront.org. Thanks for joining us on the Allegheny Front. Kathy Naur is the executive producer of our show. I'm Carol Holsapple.
Support for the Allegheny Front comes from the Heinz Endowments, the Pittsburgh Foundation, and the Park Foundation. The Richard King Mellon Foundation supports our coverage of conservation. The Sears Sweatland Family Foundation supports our coverage in Ohio. And the Robert F. Schuman Foundation supports our podcast, Trump on Earth.